Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga La Gunga.
Dan Bittley, Vince Murata.
We have very similar weird tastes and sick minds.
This is gross. That's disgusting.
Nasty.
It's nasty.
Bittley and Murata. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
All right, I don't think Phoenix basketball fans have ever looked forward to an NBA draft like this before because, well, they've never had the number one pick before. So it's like that kid in the candy store, go buy whatever you want, and you have no idea what to take. All right, you're like, really? I can take anything, and you get locked up by that?
It is like a shopping spree in a candy store, isn't it?
That's exactly what it's like. So to update everything about the NBA draft, Mo Bamba came in for a visit over the weekend. We already know what Mo thinks about his status, about how he is the perfect candidate to fill the Phoenix Suns' needs. Nobody in the history of the NBA has ever had a bigger wingspan, which I'm sure helps in blocking shots and getting rebounds.
I would hope so. Unless he's just waving his arms around like
right,
one of those.
Right.
Yeah. No. Hopefully he's blocking shots.
Well, and the thing about Mo Bamba that's a little bit different, and I think the reason why his initial comments about being perfect for the Suns hit harder than most was just the level of maturity and intelligence he spoke.
And the research he had done on the Phoenix Suns, right?
Yeah.
I'm sitting there saying, well, they've never had this sort of pick, and you need a top five shot block. You know, actually, honestly, we all kind of laughed because he's not going to be the number one pick, but he could very well be a top five rim protector in the NBA this year. That's not unheard of. If he's got a wingspan of, it's like 7'10".
Yeah.
His wingspan is taller than Kevin Durant. By a lot.
Hold on. You just blew my mind. Say that again.
His
wingspan is taller than Kevin Durant.
But what does that mean? So what?
That's a wide wingspan.
What do you mean, so what?
He could carry Kevin Durant down the court.
The visual just blew my mind.
That's true, though.
It was like the guy at the Tonys last night who was dancing with four legs. Did you see that?
Yes, of course.
Wait, what? What happened?
I knew he watched every minute of the Tonys.
I did.
Somebody was dancing with four legs.
SpongeBob the musical was one of the nominated shows.
Oh, okay.
So Squidward, he had four legs and he was tap dancing.
He was tap dancing with four legs.
Here's what Bamba said about fitting with the Suns.
Right off the bat, when you're talking impact and how I fit in with the team, I look at guys like Josh. You know, he's a great on the ball defender, and you know, he's a young guy and he's still learning the ropes of the league. But I think having him on the ball and me back there protecting the rim will be a lethal weapon. And then you have guys like TJ and Devin, and you know, I get a vet like Tyson, and you know, this is all like the tools that I need to sort of, you know, it's all there for me. It's all there for me, and I truly believe this is a it's a good place, the landing spot.
Can we save these audio clips Okay, so the Suns draft DeAndre Ayton. Let's say Mo Bamba goes out there. He's great. He becomes a free agent in 4 or 5 years or whatever. Can we remind him how much he wanted to play for Phoenix and all the reasons why he wants to play for Phoenix when he becomes a free agent? He's like, I'm not going to Phoenix. Are you silly?
Now think about this. So DeAndre Ayton, last week, he made news by coming out and saying, I will be the number one pick. And I think the story elevated to a level it was never intended to reach, because it almost made it seem like the Suns and DeAndre Ayton must have had a conversation and they must have told him, don't worry, dude, we're going to bring people in, but you're our guy. That's not necessarily the case. As we found out with young kids coming out of college, there is no shortage of bravado anymore. And on top of it, there's no filter. There's no restraint.
No. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Like,
me
it could
neither.
Be a good thing.
Well, no, it's not. It's just, I think it's really kind of in line with just this new American dynamic where it's all about self-promotion at all times for everybody.
But it certainly seemed to rub Marvin Bagley the wrong way. He didn't seem real pleased with that.
No, he didn't. But then Mo Bamba came back and said what he did. Here's the thing about Mo Bamba that I don't think the Suns are going to consider, but I guess it gives you room for pause. He's been working with a noted shooting coach. His name is Drew Hanlon, and apparently he's made major changes to his shooting form, which is good because he was kind of from that, here, dropping an old name nobody will recognize, the Jack Sigma school of shooting, where it's way behind the head and you're just kind of like slingshotting the ball at the basket. So now apparently he's made dramatic changes to his shooting form, and it's a variable. I don't think you would ever go, okay, Let's really double down on that and pick this guy because maybe he'll have this wingspan and this rim protector ability that nobody else can match, but maybe offensively he's not going to be deficient like we thought he would be.
If you love Bamba, you still don't take him at number
you
one.
Just trade down. Right?
You do what Boston did last year.
Yeah, that's right.
And move down a couple picks.
That's right. Now, bringing in Jaren Jackson Jr., he can't be in consideration, can he?
No, I think the only reason they're bringing in any of these guys, with the exception of maybe Bagley, because you know there's a lot of talk Bagley could go number one even at the start of this past college season.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reason they're bringing these other guys in is just in case somebody does come to them with some crazy trade offer that's picking four or five, and they're like, hey, we'll give you this player that will help you right now, and you just so happen to love Jaren Jackson Jr., you're still going to be able to get him at four.
Yeah.
I think they're just doing their homework. But
yeah.
The only one that could ever even potentially make them second-guess taking DeAndre Ayton would have to be Bagley.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, what about Ryan McDonough's comments? And he's made a lot of comments like these. But the comment about reaching out to see what might be available, Do you think that maybe was a little bit off-putting to Suns fans? That you wouldn't be sitting there and waiting for the phone to ring, that you would be reaching out to see?
Here, I have the audio.
Okay.
It's something we'll look at for sure. I think overall, you know, is it more likely or less likely? I think probably still less likely than likely, but we'll look at that. I mean, it's, you know, I think there's a certain range, right? And that range is probably the top five, maybe, you know, four, five, six, somewhere in that range that we'd potentially be comfortable dropping down to. Beyond that, no. So we'll take a look at that. At the end of the day, it might depend on how aggressive the teams beneath us are, you know, in terms of what the offers are to come up and get one. So that'll be, you know, a big thing we spend time on over the next week and a half analyzing. Just, you know, are we willing to do it? And if so, you know, for what cost? Because these guys have, you know, they've made it a tough decision throughout the week. There are a lot of really good players at the top of this draft.
See, that wouldn't put me off at all. It might put me off if they actually make the trade,
mm-hmm.
and it's a trade you don't like or something, but I would. You've got all the leverage. You hold all the cards right now. The NBA, everybody, the basketball world is focused on the Phoenix Suns for the next week and a half or
yes.
whatever. So why not try to exploit it to the absolute most that you can possibly
okay.
get? You're probably just going to end up with DeAndre Ayton at the end of it, which is fine. That's what most Suns fans want.
Okay, here's what I think the danger in those kind of comments are. And keep in mind, it's also pre-draft rhetoric, which means it may be true, it may not be. We know in the NFL, coaches are even at the point now in GMs where they just tell you, we're lying to you. And then they have press conferences anyway.
Yeah.
And they get quoted, even though they preface it by saying, this is going to be a session in misinformation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just use the media
and we'll play along. Okay. In this case, when Ryan McDonough makes that comment, and he qualified it at the end by saying, I don't want people overreacting. I think that's unlikely. But if you talk about a scenario where you're going to listen to teams who want to trade for the number one pick, but you don't want to get any lower than 5 to 6, you're not talking about trading for Karl Anthony Towns.
No.
You're talking about trading for maybe a piece or another piece and then moving down in the draft as well.
And that's why, that's a great point, and that's why I don't think they'll ultimately do it. Because if you bring in one of these players and they are just amazing, like Ryan McDonough said this last week, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said this is a great year to have the number one pick. And there are some years where there just really isn't a guy that deserves to go number one. There might be 3 or 4 guys that deserve to go number one this year.
Yeah.
You can't have all of them. You can have DeAndre Ayton, or you can have any one of them. But I think if you're the Suns and you trade down and take Mo Bamba, who's pretty well regarded as a guy with a ton of upside, but also a pretty big project.
Yeah,
you're right. What's the other player you're getting? It's not like you're getting Karl Anthony Towns and then the fourth pick. You're getting an okay guy off Atlanta in the fourth pick. What does that really do for you? You're just spreading DeAndre Ayton's talent out over two players.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think then in that case, it sort of contradicts the idea of DeAndre Ayton as this generational player. If he's a generational player, and there's no debate to be had between him and Luka Doncic or anybody else, then there would be no rationale to trade him for a veteran or two to fill in to get your team's maturity level up and then slot yourself at 5 and 6 to take a Mo Bamba or a Trae Young or somebody like that. Now you're sort of contradicting this idea that, hey, we got this number one pick, and man, are we lucky, because the year we got it, we get a guy who's 7 foot, 260, a generational talent.
Now, what if you could do this, though? What if you could trade back, get Mo Bamba, and then also with the other asset that you get from whoever, package that with your picks and also get a Trae Young or something? Would you rather have DeAndre Ayton, or would you rather have Mo Bamba and like Trae Young?
Okay.
All right, that's interesting. Because here's the teams that pick 2 through 5, right? And you tell me if there's any player you really want off these teams.
Mm-hmm.
Sacramento, Atlanta, Memphis, Dallas. Orlando's 6. Is there anybody off there that you're like, okay, I'll take that guy and Mo Bamba instead of DeAndre Ayton? No, not realistically. You're not getting Dirk Nowitzki 10 years ago.
So no, you're not.
What do you want?
That's right. So I don't know what it means. I do think it's that term due diligence. If you're Ryan McDonough, you have to keep your phone lines open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In this age, this day and age, where people never answer their phones, you know, you call somebody and they just don't answer. Yeah. It's not because they can't; it's they don't want to.
They just look at it,
and I'll text them later.
Yeah.
Oh, Vince
is like doing jumping through his radio right now
at me.
Yeah.
Because he thinks I do that.
He would make a comment to you right now if you were here.
No, no, no. See, that's not true. With Vinny, I don't return his texts. I take it even a step further with Vinny, right?
With Vince, you have his number blocked.
But here's the thing with Vinny. Jarrett, you have to know this, because I know he likes to complain about this with me. He sends me texts that are not important. They're just stupid little observations, okay? If he texted me something important, I would respond to him.
I don't feel like this is making the situation better.
But when he sends me an observation or something he thinks is funny, I don't feel compelled to respond to it. And I know it ticks him off, but I just don't. But in the case of a basketball general manager, you can't do that. Your phone rings, you just don't go, oh, no, I'll just text him back.
Yeah, maybe if it's Sacramento.
Yeah, you got to answer your phone, right?
Yeah.
So, to me, this Mo Bamba thing is interesting because his maturity, just the way he declares himself and speaks of himself, I'm like, wow, this kid is really intelligent. And if he did have a refined offensive game, yeah, he could be a monster. But here's the difference. Mo Bamba's body, he's going to have to fill that out to succeed at the NBA. Look at Anthony Davis in New Orleans and how physically he changed and how he had to get to the level where he's at now.
And that was Anthony Davis, who was widely considered a can't-miss prospect coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And took that Kentucky team on that crazy run. I mean, everybody knew Anthony Davis was a generational talent. Mo Bamba isn't there.
No. So, I think for the Suns' behalf, everybody, for them to maximize the excitement and the value of this number one pick, if it is not traded for Karl Anthony Towns, and I would not trade it. I was once thinking about doing it for Kawhi Leonard. I don't think getting him to sign here would happen. I do think Karl Anthony Towns and his relationship with Devin Booker, they would. He would sign.
Yeah.
They would pair up, because you can tell they're the next bromance in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
So DeAndre Ayton should be the guy, because physically he's already there. Offensively, he's already there. And if you want to maximize the value of this number one pick, then you've got to create the perception that this is a no-brainer.
That's fair. You're in this unique spot where there are quite a few really high-end prospects in this draft. And so you need to pick your guy. I think we've all picked Ayton. And you need to realize that it is entirely possible that DeAndre Ayton could be fantastic and may not, 5 years from now when we look back, may not be the best guy in this class. It may be Mo Bamba has passed him in 3 or 4 years. But you have to figure pretty confidently that Ayton either is going to be the number one best player out of this draft class when all is said and done 5, 6, 7 years from now.
Yeah.
At worst, he's going to be 2 or 3. And you just need to realize that that's the guy that you have, and you can't get cute with it.
Now, and I'm all for the game of poker you have to play. So I'm all for any rhetoric that comes out. But if I were the Phoenix Suns, and if it is a no-brainer and they don't trade it, I would literally run to the podium as soon as you're on the clock and make the pick.
1 second in.
Boom.
Yeah.
1 second in. Now, I know teams never do it, ever, because first of all, the NBA doesn't want it.
Yeah.
They want the suspense and they want the show. teams want to kind of have that moment front and center.
They want the Suns logo on the screen for 5 minutes.
That's exactly right. There's a lot of value in that, especially at the top of the draft when everybody is watching. But if you wanted to make a statement that there is no, because every second you waste with the number one pick, you're creating this illusion that, really? They've had this pick for 7 weeks?
And they still haven't decided?
And they still haven't decided?
I'm sorry, we need 7 weeks and 5 minutes.
And 5 minutes. So, and maybe you're thinking in that 5 minutes, you'll get that offer that blows you away. But I don't think that that's feasible. And if you wanted to make this statement that, boom, this is our guy and he's a generational talent, run to the podium and make the pick.
Take a half day with the D-backs and your favorite Arizona sports host this Wednesday. You can get lower level game tickets for only $9.87 as the Diamondbacks take on the Pirates, and we broadcast live from the Four Peaks draft room. Just text half to 620-620. We'll send you the link to get your half day club tickets for only $9.87. That's half to 620-620.
We were led by Paul. Paul had a tremendous weekend, and he paces us all the time, and it was a special weekend and won three special games.
All right, the Diamondbacks return home to Chase Field tonight. 3-game set against the Pirates, a 4-game set against the New York Mets. And they come home a lot more healthier and in good spirits than their previous road trip, because whatever it was that had plagued this team the month of May, it looks like they have en masse gotten past all of it. First road sweep of the season in Colorado, which is a good sign. Paul Goldschmidt's current tear, extremely good sign, but it's not just him. Ketel Marte put together a string of 10 consecutive extra base hits.
Yeah, no big deal.
David Peralta showing signs of breaking out of it as well. And now the baseball team's 35-29, 2.5-game lead back in the division. And everything that threatened to swallow this team, that black hole that was like coming our direction, they've stabilized it.
How thankful are we that the Miami Marlins are in this league to get teams like the Diamondbacks back on track?
That's a good point.
Because they took 2 of 3 from Cincinnati at the very end of May. But you got to remember, coming off that, they had dropped 2 of 3 to Oakland, and they had dropped 6 straight to the Mets and Brewers, really 7 straight if you want to go back to the previous series against the Brewers too. So you get 2 out of 3 from Cincinnati, but if you go out there the next series and lose it again, you know, you're still sort of scuffling, even if Paul Goldschmidt starts hitting. But to sweep the Marlins, to only win 1 of 3 against the Giants, but almost take 2 of 3 on the road, and now you're 5-1 against Colorado this year. Yeah. Colorado's in fourth, just like that, in this division.
Well, and then you think about that. Then you think about taking care of the Dodgers early on when the Dodgers weren't right, then taking care of Colorado on the road. This is good stuff, because it just sort of confirms that, all right, no matter how bad we were, we're still better than them.
They have the best divisional record in the National League. And I want to say only the Yankees have a better record against their own division than the Diamondbacks, who are 20-10 now. And they really haven't played San Diego that much, so figure that number's going to go up.
Yeah. And it's funny, because there was a stretch where the Diamondbacks were playing baseball games where it seemed like they could not plate more than one run per game.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to go on for a couple of weeks.
It did go on for a couple of weeks.
It did.
It seemed like it was going on for 10 years.
And it went on so long that you really started to question, is this team any good? We started wondering, all right, could they fall all the way to fourth place? How bad is this going to get? And now suddenly, it doesn't feel bad at all.
No, because you're going out there and you're scoring 29 runs in 3 games. And I'm trying to do the math prior to that. What, they had 10 against the Giants. They had 21 against the Marlins in 3 games there. And 19 against the Reds in 3 games. So what is that? It's like 60 runs over the course of 12 games.
Yeah. And so you looked at that Rockies team over the weekend. I don't know if you felt the same, but did anything about that team seem particularly fearful or dangerous?
That's the thing about this division. You've got, I think it was when Eric Burns was on, he's the one that brought this up last week, of there's 4 teams in this division that in his mind could win the World Series, but probably only one's actually going to make the playoffs, because they're all kind of underachieving.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Diamondbacks in May, grossly underachieved. They may have overachieved in April, but they certainly underachieved in May. Rockies, Trevor Story always hits the Diamondbacks well, and Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackmon are both hitting well. But other than that, they don't look dominant. They don't have great pitching.
And the thing that, and to take that point a step further, the thing that really kind of opens the highway up for the Diamondbacks again is the fact that they went through a stretch early on where their schedule was formidable. They were playing really good teams in succession, boom, 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 boom. Fared well, really well in April. We saw what happened in May. Just as they're getting right at the moment, look at what's in front of them now. Three games at home against the Pirates, four games at home against the Mets. You go to L.A. to play the Angels for a couple of games, and oh, by the way, Shohei Ohtani might need Tommy John surgery.
Yeah.
Might. Now, there's reports back and forth whether how severe this is, but we knew this guy had some arm problems in spring, and now they've resurfaced, and if they have to shut him down, that's a big blow on a lot of different levels.
I don't remember a lot of instances, and maybe I'm wrong and somebody can send in an example, but I don't remember a lot of examples of a pitcher who might need Tommy John surgery suddenly being fine.
It never happens. It's always like that worst fears theory. It always comes true when it comes to Tommy John surgery.
When it comes to major league pitchers, yes, it's pretty much always true.
So then after that two-game set with the Angels, they go to Pittsburgh. Then they go to Florida to play the Marlins again. They're home against the Giants. They play the Cardinals on July 2nd. Between now and then, there's a lot of soft candy to chew on.
They could go alternating months.
They could.
Winning like 18, losing 18, winning 18.
Yeah. That's what Luke, and Luke said that earlier, and the way it, so that means they'd have a bad September, but they're peaking for the playoffs, man.
If you make the playoffs, this team's winning the World Series, apparently. that's what we've gathered through the first 3 months of the season.
Yeah. Isn't that outstanding?
They just have to get there. But they might also be 500 at the end of September, so they might not get there just that way.
All right, coming up on the other side, Amin El Hassan, NBA expert, former Suns employee, knows a lot about the NBA. We'll hit him with a variety of topics. Luke Lipinski filling in for Vince Murata. I'm Dan Bickley. You're listening to 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Live from the Auction Community Studios, joined now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line by ESPN's Amin El Hassan. Amin, how are you doing today?
How's it going, guys?
Doing good. The NBA Finals, I guess, played out the way we basically all expected. You know, we were talking about this earlier. In your mind, do the Warriors almost sort of get lost in the shuffle in terms of what they are accomplishing because everybody was so focused on LeBron or focused on how predictable this would be? They've won now three of the last four titles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's testament to the power of LeBron. That you know, he's, you know, even as the Warriors are achieving historic levels of greatness, the center of the story is still LeBron James, and I think rightfully so. I think he's the most compelling character when we think of the NBA and think about all the people in this universe of stars and all that. But you know, what the Warriors did. And what they continue to do and what we expect them to continue to do, they're going to walk away as the best team of all time. And I know that's going to upset people who, you know, grew up on Jordan's Bulls or Magic's Lakers or, you know, or for the oldest ones of us, the Russell's Celtics in the 50s and 60s. But I think when you factor in everything, free agency, you factor in the level of talent across the league night in, night out, I think Golden State is, you know, what they've been able to build has been unprecedented.
Wow. Heavy praise. I mean, let me ask you this, though. David West came out and said, people don't understand how much stuff we had to deal with behind the scenes. What have you heard or what do you suspect might have gone down other than just the fatigue of having championship run after run after run?
Well, Vic, the boring answer is Pat Riley described it as the disease of more. Which is everyone comes together. We got to win a championship. We win a championship. Hooray. And then next year, everyone's like, wait a second. I'm a championship winning power forward, a small forward or whatever it is. I deserve more. I deserve more touches. I deserve more money. I deserve more recognition. I deserve more praise. It's natural human condition. And that's why repeating championships are hard. And that's why for the longest time, you know, until Michael Jordan came along, the last team to three-peat was Mike and Lakers, it was Russell Celtics, and then nobody until Jordan in the 90s, and then obviously, again, Shaq and Kobe. It's hard because of that disease of more. It's hard for people to continue to buy into roles that they may see as holding them back from what they their full potential could be. That's a boring answer. The juicy answer is I don't know. I've heard people muttering things that I'm not comfortable saying, journalistically speaking, on air. But massive issues that they had during the year that they were able to keep under wraps.
Well, okay, so then let's go this direction with this. Then I mean, there's no way we enter next year without Golden State being the heavy favorites. I guess that depends where LeBron lands, but most likely Golden State's going to be the heavy favorite.
Wherever he lands, they're the heavy favorite.
Yeah. So how long can this continue then? If that disease of Moore is going to keep being there?
Well, the disease of Moore is what would break them apart. It's the idea that you can't keep everyone happy doing the same thing, even as it's ending in the ultimate happiness of a championship. So if you're an anti-Warriors person, you're actually rooting for the disease of Moore to infect this team and eventually break them up. But even without that happening, again, I'll say like my buddy Ethan Strauss, who covers the Warriors for the Athletic, said it. At halftime of Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, did everyone think it was a foregone conclusion? Right? When they were down 3-2, did anyone think it was a foregone conclusion? Mm-hmm. No. We still thought that there was a chance that the Warriors were going to lose. And as long as you, at any moment, even have a moment of doubt, then it's good. It's happening. It's the way it should be. They're not unbeatable. We know that. 2016 taught us they're not unbeatable. So the idea is you've got to have, obviously, a strong enough roster, but a strong enough cohesive identity. Right, you can't just be a collection of people like Oklahoma City. You've got to have a style of play that's defined and is surgical in the way you're going to attack them.
All right, now speaking of LeBron, we have already heard a lot come out after the end of the NBA Finals. Dwayne Wade said he's going to prioritize family and lifestyle. There's a report that Greg Popovich is going to try to bull his way into the proceedings and sell him on South Beach. The Lakers as a destination seems to be gaining steam, especially if Chris Paul might join him. What are your thoughts, Amin, on what might go down, what he might be looking at, and ultimately where he might end up?
Well, I think we can all agree the front runners are all, I guess, Lakers. You throw Cleveland has to be there because he's already there. Philadelphia. And then San Antonio obviously offers some intrigue there. I think even when you expand it out to a lot of other suitors, I think Philadelphia is the one, from a basketball standpoint, offers him the longest window to continue competing year in and year out. And I think that's really important. But as Dwayne Wade pointed out, the guy he's going to make a free agent decision that's unlike the last two he made, in that what his family, particularly his sons, his oldest of whom is now coming into his own as a basketball talent, that's going to matter. And then obviously he's got his off-the-court business interests, and I'm not talking about selling sneakers. I'm talking about big business, entertainment, and movie production and all that. That's going to factor in too. I don't know how much of those things are important enough for him to make a decision. So when people ask me what I think he should do, I always speak from just a basketball standpoint. To me, Philadelphia is the place because that gives you a chance to legitimately go to the finals for another 8 years, maybe.
Talking to Amin Al-Hassan. Amin, the draft coming up next week, it looks pretty clear the Suns are going to take DeAndre Ayton, but they've had these other guys in here. They've had Marvin Bagley and Jaren Jackson and Mo Bamba in here to work out, and a lot of these guys are making strong claims that they feel like they should be the top pick as well. Who are some of these other guys outside of Ayton that the Suns probably won't get, but that you like as potential all-stars in this league?
Well, I think all the guys you named, Jaren Jackson and Bagley in particular, I think really talented guys who have a lot of upside in terms of how much better they can get. I think, Vic, we talked about this a few weeks ago, but Doncic, I'm enamored by Doncic for his passing ability. I don't think that's something that's easy to teach when you look at all the different type of talents that are out there. I can teach a guy to shoot. I can even teach a guy to become better defensively. I can't teach a guy to be a great passer. That's a gift from God. Or basketball gods or whatever. So Doncic is obviously someone I'm very high on. But Jackson, Bagley, and then if he's healthy, and that's a huge if, Michael Porter Jr. He's got big-time potential in terms of his ability, his size, and the way he shoots the ball. it'd be something really special.
I want to ask you about this, Amin, because I get that the Timberwolves probably do not want to trade Karl-Anthony Towns, and I get that that story is probably all but dead. But one of the highlights of the last few weeks has been all the social media put out there, mostly from Devin Booker, but there was something that Karl-Anthony Towns posted that included a little video clip with Kevin Hart and Devin Booker. These two guys, Devin Booker, Karl-Anthony Towns, I said earlier, they're like the new NBA bromance, the new guys who are like inseparable. What does that say to you, if anything, about the future of both of them?
Well, I mean, obviously that's something that we're all going to keep tabs on from here on out, right? Through free agencies and through, you know, it's the same thing as Wade and LeBron.
Yep.
And Bosh. Those guys are good friends in the same draft class and good friends that played on Team USA together. And 2 years later, they became good friends, all became teammates. And I think in this era, you know, this is the true AAUification of the NBA. These guys all know each other from a very young age, even if they've never played with him. Now, obviously, they played together in Kentucky for a year, but they've known each other for a while. And so with players having greater agency with where what happens with their careers, I think we have to. It's upon us to keep tabs on all of these relationships, because they may end up one day playing together on an NBA team.
Amin Alhassan, great stuff. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the offseason, all right?
There's no offseason. Draft, it's free agency, it's summer league.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't stop.
Uh-huh. All right, well, dude, well, whatever it is, enjoy it anyways, my man. You know we'll be hollering at you.
All right.
Thank you, Amin. Thank you, brother.
Thanks a lot. That's Amin Alhassan joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com.
All right. Earlier today, I don't know if you know this, but the Stanley Cup has its own Twitter account. And the Stanley Cup tweeted out, best period, weekend period, ever period. We'll explain next. Luke Lipinski, Dan Bickley, 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Marotta.
It is the human version of a train wreck. You can't look away.
I like this guy. They're funny guys.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
All right, Jared, that might be the best definition of this radio program. The human version of the train wreck. Cannot look away. I'm buying it. All right, if a trophy could talk, nobody would have better stories than the Stanley Cup trophy.
True.
The most revered trophy in all of sports. This trophy has been through an awful lot. Hockey great Maurice Richard, remember him? He's tried drinking from the cup once, chipped a couple of teeth. Okay? It endured salt damage and butter stains when Martin Brodeur ate popcorn out of it. Okay? Stains lasted for 8 days until teammate Jamie Langenbrunner said, dude, man, clean this thing up before you pass it on to a teammate.
What a legacy to have, too.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
I ate popcorn out of the Stanley Cup.
Now, there have been a lot of great stories, and you know that Pantera has a special place on this radio station because of Wolf's Pantera call-out.
Yeah.
The Stanley Cup, after the Dallas Stars won it, ended up in the pool of Pantera drummer Vinnie Paul. Okay, floating in the pool.
Yes.
Lord only knows how it ended up there. And if it was hanging out with the guys from Pantera, I can't even begin to believe what that thing went through. Now, that was Craig Ludwig, I believe, who's a former Stars defenseman.
Yeah.
I guess he had time. There you go. Not doing it. Not doing it.
Neither one of you. Come on, Luke.
I will not.
I didn't want to cut off Dan.
I will not be able to talk for the rest of the program. Maybe later.
Maybe on Friday. But if I already know Vince isn't here for the next 4 days, I'm going to need my voice on some level. Yeah.
And Jarrett, you know what happens with me when either I laugh too much, right? Then I start clearing my throat. You start making eyes at me, right?
We don't want to help making eyes at you.
Well, yeah, rolling
those,
your eyes.
Those are unrelated.
I'm not sure a hockey team has ever partied as long or drank as much alcohol as these Washington Capitals.
And it hasn't even been a week yet. Like, they just won.
Well, just the
it
fact
hasn't
that
been
it's,
that long.
The fact that it's been a week and they haven't stopped.
This is what happens, right, when you've waited this long to win something and you've had this much disappointment. And specifically with Ovechkin, there were so many years when they were knocked out of the playoffs and he took the blame when it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
Or they, you know, it became such a running joke that they kept losing to the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round of the playoffs. And it's true. They kept doing it. But it's not like these were four-game sweeps. Most of them went to Game 7. It's hockey. Anything can happen in a Game 7. You could make a case that Pittsburgh was better than Washington this year, and Washington was better than Pittsburgh last year. But Ovechkin just took so much of the heat, even though a lot of times it was his teammates' fault. And he finally, for him to finally break through, I expect nothing less than this.
Alex Ovechkin, we talked about this. I don't know if there is any geopolitical stuff attached to sports stars we like to embrace or not. There have not been a lot of Russian-born sports stars to make it in America. And you mentioned very hilariously that most of them in the past seem to have dated Anna Kournikova.
Yeah, he's the first one that has, it feels like.
And that would have been Sergei Fedorov, Pavel Bure, right?
Yeah, at least those two.
Sergei Fedorov was a great player, but none of them approached the talent of Alex Ovechkin, who's always kind of been this wild party guy, but he hasn't stopped. The Nationals had the Capitals at a baseball game, and they threw out the first pitch, and during the middle of a game, all of a sudden they focus on a guy standing up in the third deck in the outfield holding up the Stanley Cup.
He just keeps resurfacing everywhere. Did you watch the celebration right after they won? Typically, the captain gets the cup, he does a lap, and then you kind of don't hear from him again until later on. So obviously, Ovechkin's the captain, he does a lap. Then he hands it to the next guy, but he also kind of skates with him, too, with one hand on the cup. And then it looked like he was just going to, like, kind of hang out around the line. He got back in later, took the cup again. He organized the picture. Like, I can't – obviously, when you win and you've never won before, especially that trophy, because you have to get so beat up to get there.
Yeah.
You want it. But this is what it's all about.
This is taken to another level.
Yeah. See, the videos of him walking through the casinos.
Oh, my –
the clubs.
Yeah, for it to happen in Vegas, too, of all places.
They all jumped into a fountain and went swimming in a fountain in D.C. Then they all went, all the players went and got Stanley Cup tattoos. They're taking this to a new level.
Keg stand out of the cup.
Yeah. Yeah. You give Alex Ovechkin his first cup, and you give it to him in Las Vegas.
What could possibly
be? All right, so why don't all the sports do this with their championship trophy?
It's a great idea.
Give it to a player for a week, and then...
Generally, it's supposed to be a day. It's supposed to be one day.
And I'm not even sure this is counting as Ovechkin's day. I think he just took it.
I think sort of like Vladimir Putin taking Robert Kraft's Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, there you go.
It's mine now. Thank you. See you later.
What ring?
What ring? Now, for those who don't know the history of the Stanley Cup, what they do is they take they have a welder or whatever they call it, and they have like a rectangle sheet of metal, and they inscribe everybody's name on the winning team, and they wrap it around the cup. Now, eventually, the cup runs out of room, and they have to take bands off of it. But there's a guy who the NHL hires who transports this cup, puts on white gloves, carries it around, and he will be with the Capitals every moment that they are transporting this cup.
It puts on white gloves.
Right.
To someone who's going to put beer and popcorn and stuff inside.
Or dent the thing. When I talk about that Pantera party, they dented the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, somebody cracked it or dented it or something.
Yeah, they dented the Stanley Cup, which leads this question. What would ever happen if the Coyotes won the Stanley Cup, given our circuitous journey?
Well, and where were some of the places they would go in the Valley? If you won the Stanley Cup, where would you take it?
You could take it to all the cities they were rumored to move to. And didn't go.
Just do a parade. Just do a parade through Winnipeg.
Right. Yeah. Go through Winnipeg.
Go through
Hamilton.
You know,
go through
Quebec, to the Phoenix Open.
Go to Portland.
You know, it would make an appearance at the
Phoenix
Open.
It would just hang out in Scottsdale for a while, I would imagine.
Yeah,
but most of these guys don't take, like, I doubt we're going to see it in D.C. very often after this. Like, I'm sure Ovechkin will take it back to Russia. Everybody takes it back to their hometown on their day.
Yes. You'd have to take it to Shane Doan's house, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
At some point in time?
Like, yeah. I don't know, though. Would that be like just teasing Shane
Doan?
He looks out his window and sees the Stanley
Maybe.
Cup?
Maybe.
He should take it to Russia, because they say that Washington, D.C. is just like Russia, but with more... Wait, let me ruin that joke. Let me see here.
Oh, that was a joke?
They say Russia is just like Washington, D.C., but with less Russians. I don't know. Never mind.
Wow. Yeah, never mind. We'll never mind that.
Not like the punchline's the most important part of a joke.
All right, so you are Mr. Hockey. What are your takeaways from all of this? The celebration, Alex Ovechkin's profile. What do you make of this?
I think that the biggest thing and the reason why there is such a celebration, like you make the reference to if the Coyotes won, and there's other teams that have never won. I think why this is so extreme is because it's Ovechkin. And I think at the end of the day, as much as I like the Vegas storyline, and when we got to the Cup, I wanted Vegas to win because at that point, let's see history. But it's better for the league that not only does your expansion team not win the Stanley Cup their first year, but that one of your true all-time superstars in your sport. And Ovechkin, really, he's going to go down as one of the top two or three pure goal scorers, maybe number one all-time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't look great if he doesn't win the Cup.
That's a great point. And like I said, for whatever reasons, he has never been just collectively embraced by sports. I know hockey fans know how good he is, but he's never been collectively embraced for his greatness the way other guys in other sports are.
Well,
when just their sheer greatness speaks enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. When you get into the world of hockey, there's a lot of there's a Canadian rivalry with Russian players, or Canadian, I don't know if it's Canadian
that's
media or whatever, but
no,
there's a lot
point
of that where he is, in my opinion, Sidney Crosby is twice the player that Ovechkin is, but he's treated like he's 10 times the player as Ovechkin because he's from Canada.
That's a great point. And that kind of speaks to whether that's geopolitical, whether that's all just rivalries, whether whatever it is, now this guy is front and center with this thing, and he's not disappointing. I mean, it's just hysterical. His beard, his teeth missing, the constant, right?
He celebrates the way he plays. Like, he's just running through things and breaking stuff.
Yes, that's...
And it really, I mean, started in Vegas a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And somehow it ended up in D.C. over the weekend. I don't even know how he got there.
They're going to be on Jimmy Fallon tonight.
Really?
Ovechkin's going to be on Jimmy Fallon?
Yes, he tweeted a crazy picture of him on a plane on the way there. With the
sober
cup.
Or otherwise.
Does he just think he's going to be on Jimmy Fallon and really he's just flying
he's
to
really not?
North Dakota or something?
Man.
That's probably worth watching.
I tell you, if Phoenix could ever get their hands on that thing, it would be really funny. And really unreal, because what other hockey franchise can say what we say in a bad way about heartbreak, dead ends, relocation rumors, ownership debacles? Ownership debacles are not new in the NHL. It used to be buying a franchise in the NHL, the price was low enough where a lot of these $50,000 millionaires finagle their way into buying teams.
And the Islanders get bought by a guy that had no money at all.
Who had no money, guys who could put together balance sheets that were just worth the paper they were printed on, and then they would have stakes. So bad ownership is not anything that new in the NHL, but who has our story?
Somebody needs to write the book of the Coyotes over the last 10 years, and it would be a painful book to write, but if they ever won the Cup, that needs to be your last chapter.
I would read that book just for the Gretzky stories.
Well, I would
write that book just for the Gretzky stories.
You have a great writer who's written a book, and you have Mr. Hockey here.
That's why I said somebody.
Let's collaborate.
All right, during the break.
During the break. All right, coming up, the Bickley Blast and tons of fun shenanigans, or in my case, shenanigans. Luke Lipinski, Dan Bickley, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.